All right, morning, everyone. Today's daf in Suvos is Pei Dalad. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is long lezecha nishmas liba Gabriela bar Shmuel. We're in Pei Gimel Amud Beis. We're towards the top of the Amud and Imkein Lama Kasav Lo. We're at the two dots heading the next part of the Mishnah. Let's take a look back. Let's review what we learned yesterday. Yesterday we started the ninth parak of the Masechta. Ninth parak of Suvos. Talks about a siluk. He wants to remove himself from some of the benefits that the Chachamim entitled him to. A man marries a woman, so he's entitled to her nichsei malug in one of three ways. Number one is that he could block sale. In other words, she wants to sell the nichsei malug. It's hers. It's she. Even though she gets married, she doesn't divest herself from that property. That property still belongs to her. Her name is on the title, and it still remains on the title, but she can't sell it. He blocks the sale. That's number one. Number two, he gets the peiros. The fruit that comes off the nechsei malug are his. And number three is Yerusha. Upon death, if she predeceases him, so he's going to inherit the nechsei malug. So in three ways, he is a beneficiary of that nechsei malug. And the Mishnah talks about him being misalik. In other words, he wants to excuse himself. He wants the marriage to be a little bit more... predicated on the relationship and a little bit less on the money, so he wants to be misalik. So the Mishnah says that using the proper terminology, he can be misalik. He can remove himself. He can remove himself from the blocking of the sale, he can remove himself from the peiros, and he can remove himself ultimately from Yerusha. Although on that last point of Yerusha, that's a machlokus between the Tanakam and Rishon ben Gamliel, and later this morning we're going to explain what that machlokus is all about. A couple points that we made yesterday, just quickly to review. Number one, the Mishnah says Hakosev Lishto, that in order to remove himself from these rights and privileges, so he doesn't have to actually write it down, it's just a simple amira, a verbal declaration would be sufficient. Okay, the second issue which we did yesterday, which was really the main issue of yesterday's daf, was siluk is normally not enough. In other words, if you go into a partnership and you have shares in any venture, so you can't just simply say, hey, I'm walking away. In other words, that's not a transfer of ownership. Transfer of ownership is when you actively take your shares and you transfer them to somebody else. And so if you use any of these passive languages of, like we saw yesterday, dinu dvarim, ainli besada, or ainli esekba, or yadi misuleka seimenu, if you use any kind of that passive language, so that's not withdrawal doesn't mean anything. It doesn't affect anything. So the Gemara asks a very simple question. In our Mishnah, that's exactly what he's doing. He has a shares and partnership in her inner property, and what is he going to do? He's just simply going to walk away? He can't do that. That doesn't do anything. So I think Gemara's answer yesterday is that this language which he's writing or saying is going to happen before the marriage begins, meaning before Nisuin, during Erisin, but before Nisuin, where he does not have the shares as of yet. His shares only come at the point of Nisuin. So beforehand, if he wants to block his shares from coming into his possession, so then he could use the passive language as described in the Mishnah. Once married, what was the Gemara's language we saw yesterday? Yado ki yada, or yado adifa ki yada. His hand is like her hand, his hand is greater than her hand. Right? And the Gemara in Yevamos points out that there's a subtle difference between those two. But basically, after Nisuin, when they're now tried and true partners in her property, again, partnership over here, not in the classic sense of they each have shares in it, but because he has the peiros, so he has a hand in her property, so therefore he cannot, the passive language is simply not going to affect that transfer of share. Okay, that's what we saw yesterday. Last thing we did yesterday, just as long as we're reviewing, a full review, last thing we did yesterday was Kenyan. What if you use this passive language? Well, actually, according to Rashi, the question of Kenyan was not going on our Mishnah. According to Rashi, the question of Kenyan was going on the Braisa about a partnership. What if you try to remove yourself from a partnership and then you ratify it with a Kenyan? Does that Kenyan do anything? A Kenyan suitor, let's say, for example. Does that do anything? So the Gemara had a machlokas on that issue. And that's where we ended off with yesterday. Okay. Imkein Lama Kasav Lo. Let's continue now in the Gemara and Pei Gimel Amud Beis. And we're at the two dot stars at the top of the Amud. And with the first question the Gemara is asking as follows. V'temolei mikol mile silike nafshech. Look. So he says to her, let's take a look at that first language of the Mishnah. He says, dinu dvarim einli benechsech. Literally translated, I don't want anything to do with your property. Now, how do we interpret that? We interpret that to mean is that if she intends on selling the property, she could sell it. Meaning, generally speaking, a husband has a right to block sale of a property. And when he uses this language, so he's relinquishing that right, which means that he lifts the block where now she could sell the property. To which the Gemara says, "Vitei malei, somebody call me ilay selik denav shech." Look, she could say to him, at this point in time, you get right, you withdrew yourself from my property. So, in other words, get lost. I mean, get lost. I mean, don't get me wrong. They're husband and wife. They're, you know, happily married. But as it relates to the property, like, get lost. Meaning, didn't you write before the marriage that you're going to have nothing to do with the property? So, Amar Abaye Yad Baal Shal Tachtona. So, Abaye says that we have a general rule, right? An important rule throughout Shas. And that is that the holder of the shtar, so he's got the lower hand. Interesting, right? The note holder is in a compromised position. Why? Why is he in a compromised position? Because he's a note holder. Meaning that, generally speaking, when he's a note holder, what's on the other end? The other end is a muchzak. Meaning, I'm holding a note, that means you're holding the money. I'm holding a note, that means that you're holding asset. And I'm trying to extract it from you. And we have a general rule. I'm motzmei chaver, I'll have a raya. In other words, so if I'm trying to take something out of your hand, so and all I'm having is a note, so that note better be very clear, definitive proof that what I'm entitled to is exactly what says in the note. And any time there's any ambiguity within the note, so now I'm not going to take something out of your hand if my note doesn't say with absolute clarity what it is I'm entitled to. So now, when I'm holding a note, and all the note says is some sort of vague reference to, I'm extracting myself from the property. Okay, what does that mean? So it can mean one of three things. It can mean payros, it can mean inheritance, it can mean I can block your sale. So what we're always going to do, always, is that whenever a note can mean a number of things, we're always going to go with a minimalist interpretation, and we're always going to favor the landholder. So here the landholder is a woman, and the minimalist interpretation is going to be how we interpret the note. So good. So now I have three choices. Again, what my three choices are, payros, blocking of sale, and Yerusha. Which one is the minimalist? Meaning, understood. It's an ambiguous language that he wrote in the document, or he verbally stated before they got married. Which one is the least of the three? That's what the Gemara wants to know. They might be pay ray.
So, because if he sells the land,
So the Gemara's question now is, if we have ambiguity and we're looking for the least of the three, so let's say it's got to be payros. Meaning, look, think about it. Like Phil just articulated, what happens now? She sells the land. The land is gone. Right, Yerusha, okay, that's death. That'll come later on. But right now, if she sells the land is gone. So if we want to know what is the minimum ramification for him, it would be payros. Payros means a couple of fruit here and now. Okay, good. So that's what he's excusing himself from. But not from the allowance of her to sell the land. She sells the land, that's it, it's gone. So Amar Abaye Butzina Tav Mikra. So Abaye gives an expression, we'll see this a couple times throughout Shas, and that is, a small pumpkin is much better than a large pumpkin. Now we have an expression here in English, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. Okay? The Gemara agrees, but actually the math is a little bit different. Life math for today is, right, and we say a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. The Gemara says no, a bird in the hand is better. Right, the new life math for today. A bird in the hand is better than two in the bush. The butzina tav mikra, meaning let's consider. Right now he's going to get payros. Meaning that is a real benefit that he gets right here right now. Now again, payros, meaning okay, some fruit that come off the land. Now it's true that in the future she can go ahead and sell the land. That's the future. When we get to that bridge, we'll cross it. Meaning, there may be a chance to sell the land, there may be not. Given the choice of, you can either get fruit right now, or you could block her sale of the land. From the husband's perspective, the fruit's better. Fruit's better. And because of that, now we have a vague shtar, which an ambiguous shtar, which we're not sure what it means. So, the first thing we're going to knock off is his ability to block the sale. Because that's going to happen sometime in the future, and that's not right now. And right now, Paris is good. Paris right now is better than the blocking of the sale.
The sale. Hmm? He always has a bailiff. That doesn't make sense.
No, because
tell it later on too.
No, but if he blocks this, I understand that. But if he keeps that clause of blocking the sale, right, that means he's losing the payros. Meaning, the shtar has got to mean something. The shtar has got to be a reference to something. So the Gemara says, okay, but there's a third option, Vayim of Yerusha. Gemara says, okay, but now we also know that he has that of Yerusha. So why don't we say that it's a reference to Yerusha? Amar Abai, Misa Shchicha, Mechir Lo Shchicha. So the Gemara says, Abai's explanation is, look, death is Shchiach. Actually, truth of the matter is, it's more than Shchiach. Meaning it's, you know, it's inevitable. But it's something that you have to be more concerned about than Mechira, than the sale of a land. Meaning, in order for her to sell land, she's going to have to take the land that was given to her by her father and actively sell it off to somebody else. Rashi points out over here, it's a small Rashi towards the middle of the Amud. Ein Isha wrote to Limkor Nichse Beis Avia. Dad gave her a land. Dad said, here you go, happy life, happy marriage. And now she's not going to sell the land. Meaning, she could, but she's not going to want to sell it. So given the thing that is going to be least likely to happen. Mm-hmm. So the choice between the sale of the land and death. So death is more likely to happen than the sale of land. So the v'chimasalke inavshnav shei mimilsa delo shchiach mimilsa deshchiach lo misalke inavshnav shei. So once again, we're talking about what people are removing themselves from. People are removing themselves from things that are unlikely as opposed to things that are likely. So things that are likely, death, Yerusha. That's something which I'm not removing myself from. Her selling the land, it's really unlikely that she's going to sell the land. So you know what? If I'm removing myself from anything, I'm removing myself from her selling the land because it's probably not going to happen. Rav Ashi Amar. Now Rav Ashi's going to get us to the same conclusion. Meaning again, the question on the table is as follows. He uses this kind of ambiguous language of, I'm being mesalik, I'm removing myself from your nechsayach. Now what does that mean? So right now we argued that it must mean the thing that is less likely to happen, which is her selling the land. And why? Because again, yadosh hashtar la tachtona, because the note holder is the one who is not in the driver's seat. And if he's going to extract something from somebody, so it's got to be with clarity. And because there's ambiguity in our Mishnah of what exactly he meant, so we're going to assume that what he meant was the thing that is least beneficial to him, least likely to happen. In other words, that's what he's removing himself from. But Peros is getting all the time. Peros is right here, right now. Yerusha, she's going to die. Again, he may die before she does, but she's going to die. So if anything, the only thing he's removing himself from is his ability to block her sale, because chances are she's not going to sell the land. All that is approach number one. Ravashi's approach, it's going to be a somewhat different approach, but it's going to get us to the same conclusion. And that is, Amar b'nechsayich v'lo b'perisayim. B'nechsayich v'lo l'achar misa. Meaning, look at the wording that he used. The wording that he chose is, Am dinu dvarim ein li b'nechsayich. I don't want any part of your estate. Now, he didn't say the peros, he said the estate. Now, he didn't say Yerusha, he said the estate, meaning while your estate, meaning while you're alive. So the only thing now, just from that word itself, the only thing that he's removing himself from is her ability to sell that land. He had a right to block the sale, he's removing that impediment.
If she sells it, he's not going to Yerusha, right?
That's clear. Right.
It's the worst thing.
It's true. Rav Yehuda Amar Lo Lama Hu Ochel Peros. Rav Yehuda says that he can eat the secondary derivatives from the land. Tana Rabbanan Elohim Peros Elohim Peros. Okay, a simple brisa that details what exactly is Peros versus Peros. Echniso Lo Karkavasa Peros Arehin Peros. So you have a land and its first yield, that's Peros. Machar Peros, let's say you sell the yield, Velakach Mem Karka, and then what you do with the benefits of that Peros is you roll that over into another piece of property. Viasa Peros, and that produces Peros, Hare in Peros. So that's a secondary Peros that we're describing in the Brisa. Ibailahu. Now according to Rav Yehuda, in order for you to be excluded from the Peros, so you have to actually articulate the word Peros, and if you look carefully at what he said, the language of Rav Yehuda in the Mishnah, he says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer La'olam Ochel Peri Peros. Rabbi Yehuda says that you can eat the secondary peros Ashiach Tovla until the wording goes like this: Dinu Dvarim Einli B'Nechsech V'Perosim V'Perosim Ad Olam. Okay. Now, what the Gemara wants to know, this is such a detail-oriented question, but according to Rabbi Yehuda, what was that key line? Was the key line periperos or dilma adolam dafka? Or was the key line, according to Rav Yehuda, the words adolam? What exactly excluded himself from the secondary dividend? Oh, dilma tarvayo dafka. Or maybe there's option number C, which number C. Option C, which is maybe both. Both are necessary. So, intim salam periperos dafka adolam lamali. So, akamash lam, kim de kasal periperos, kim de kasal la adolam dami. So the Gemara says that. Look, periperos really is the key. It says if you're writing adolam when you say periperos, imtim salam adolam dafka, or you can argue the other way, that adolam is necessary. And periperos lamali akamashlan afkav dekasal periperos dekasval adolam in ilolo. In other words, the adolam becomes so critical. Even if you write periperos, that by itself is not going to be enough. In order for it to work, you have to write adolam. Imtim salam tarvayu dafka. And maybe you can make that argument that no, it's C. The right answer C, which is both. Dafka tarti lamali tzricha dekasval periperos velo kasval adolam. Havamina periperos udlo achla aval pere de pere. If you just write periperos, so that means that the secondary derivative you're prohibited from, but anything beyond that you're permitted. So that's why I need the words adolam. Because of la adolam, and if you say the words adolam, velokas of la periperos, without formulating the words periperos, havamina la olam aperos kai. Really, when you say the words adolam, you're really going on peros. And the reason why is because peros is unending. Meaning, there's going to be a yield this year, there'll be a yield next year, meaning peros is something which is a continuous supply stream that comes out of the property. So just because you say the words adolam does not necessarily mean that you're excluding yourself from the secondary derivative. So that's why you have to say periperos in order to exclude yourself from the secondary as well. And that's why I need periperos. So in other words, both languages are clear. So on the question of to properly exclude yourself from the secondary derivative, it's either your choices are A, B, and C. Either periperos is the key line, adolam is the key line, or both are the key line. The Gemara does not resolve that issue. Next, ibay lahu kasav ladinu dvarim einli benechsech of a periperos mashi yochel peros. Okay. One last very detail-oriented question on this topic, and that is, let's say you formulate the following. You say to her, I'm excluding yourself from the land and from periperos. So you skipped a step. In other words, you talked about the land, which means that you're not going to, if she wants to, she could sell the land, right? You're not going to block the sale. And you jump to periperos, which is the secondary derivative, but you leave out the peros. So, mahu shiocha peros. So, you exclusion from the land, exclusion from the secondary derivative. What about the actual peros himself? Mi periperos salak nafshe, mi perlo salak nafshe. On one hand, the argument can be, you only excluded yourself from the secondary derivative, but the primary derivative, otherwise known as peros, you is not excluded from. O dilma mikol mele salak nafshe. Or maybe no. Maybe the words periperos is just a formula that would include both the secondary and the primary peros as well. Pshita, then we call milei salak nafshe. So the Gemara says it's obvious. Meaning, even though the Gemara raises this as a question, something we're going to entertain, but the Gemara says this is pretty obvious. That if you're excluding yourself from the secondary, you're certainly excluding yourself from the primary. Diamar mi periperos salak nafshe, mi perlo salak nafshe. Because let's think about this. Meaning, if really what we're entertaining is the idea that he's only withdrawing from secondary peros, but not from the primary peros, well, if he's going to eat all the peros, so then there are no periperos. I'm excluding myself from something that never will exist. The Gemara says that, as I say that, that doesn't make sense. I mean, in other words, can't be. The only way there can be peiros is if there's peiros. So obviously, it must be an exclusion from both. But the Gemara says, but look, that argument in of itself is not a conclusive argument. It could very well be that he isn't allowing himself to peros, and to the question of, well, if he's eating the peros, how are we going to generate peros? The answer is, he didn't eat all the peros. He ate most of the peros. It's possible that some of those peros are going to get reinvested, and that reinvestment will yield more peros, otherwise known as peros. And so the Gemara says that in of itself is not a conclusive argument to say that just because he excludes himself from peros does not mean that he excludes himself from peros. So once again, Gemara raises a question. The Gemara leaves this question unresolved. When you exclude yourself from peros, does that also mean that you're automatically excluding yourself from peros? Okay, and now we get to the big topic of the day. First half of today's daf. We're on the bottom of Pei Gimel Amud Aleph. We're at the two dots, and here we go. In the Mishnah, so three things he excluded himself from. Sequentially, progressively, more harsh. Number one, he excluded himself from the land, meaning that if she wants to sell the land, so she may do so, and he's not going to block the sale. As the Gemara just explained to us a couple minutes ago, that's highly unlikely. She's not going to sell the land, but if she does, the sale's a valid sale. That's one. Two, he removed himself from peros. Generally speaking, a husband has a right to the dividends of his wife's land, and he wants to exclude himself from that, so he may do so by writing the words dinu dvarim, as we already discussed earlier this morning. You have to say that before the nisuin. Three is Yerusha. Then third, in the third stage of this siluk, of this exclusion, he says to his wife, you know, the nechseh malug, after you die, I'm not going to inherit it. So does that work? According to the Tanna Kamma, that works. Which means then, that if she predeceases him, so her nechseh malug are not going to be inherited by the husband, it'll go to her family. Good. Then along comes Rabbi Shimon Gamliel in the Mishnah, and he says, no. Even if he writes that before the marriage, and I'm not going to inherit your nechseh malug, if she dies before he does, he will be inheriting her property. Right? Because, as Rav Shimon Gamliel explained back in the Mishnah, if you make a condition against something that goes, I'm sorry, if you make a condition against something the Torah says is will happen, it is a totally ineffective condition, and therefore the condition is just simply ignored and nullified. And so therefore when the wife dies, the nechseh malug will go to the husband because that's part of the din Torah. Okay, and so it gets us to a topic which we discussed previously, and that is this idea of masna mashikasa b'torah. Can you overwrite that which the Torah writes? Now, as we discussed already before, this is not going to be a discussion when it comes to Issa v'Heter. Meaning when the Torah says something is prohibited, something is permitted, so there's nothing to talk about overriding. The only time that we're having a discussion of overriding is only when it comes to mamonos, when it comes to monetary law. So is the Torah giving us mitzvos, meaning is it like Issa v'Heter? Like, this is what's going to happen, and you have absolutely no right to override it. Or on the other hand, maybe when it comes to mamonos, what the Torah is making is recommendations, kind of like, you know, it defaults, meaning this is going to default what happened. But if you want to, you know, if you have other ideas of what should be done with the money, so then you have the right to do so. This is a basic question of masna mashikasa b'torah when it comes to mamonos. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel in our Mishnah clearly is of the opinion that when it comes to dinei daraisa, ain't other masna mashikasa b'torah. You can overwrite the Torah. So even though you go into the marriage saying, hey, you keep your nechasim, it's not going to happen. If she predeceases him, he will inherit. But the Gemara discusses. Amar Rav Halacha Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Okay, so we go, Gemara jumps right to the halacha, and that is that the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel. However, here's where it gets interesting. V'lo mitame. So Rav says, I agree with the conclusion, but not with the process that gets us to the conclusion. Okay, what does that mean? So my halacha, Rav Shimon Gamliel, v'lo mitame. So that means as follows. So could it be that Rav is going to say the following? On one hand, the halach is like Rav Shimon Gamliel. On the other hand, Rav Shimon Gamliel is of the opinion that if you make a condition that goes against the Torah, your condition is simply invalidated. And Rav disagrees fundamentally. So if he disagrees fundamentally, how can he agree with the conclusion of Rav Shimon Gamliel? And it could be as follows, that as we pointed out back in the Mishnah, but let's say it again, there's nowhere where the Torah says with absolute clarity that when a wife dies, a husband inherits the estate of the wife. That is learned out through a drasha, and it could very well be that this drasha is subject to a debate. And what the Gemara now is proposing is that Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that Yerusha Sabal is a din d'oraisa, and Eina Adamas Namash because of Betara. Rav disagrees fundamentally with that viewpoint, meaning that Rav is of the opinion that that you can re-override the Torah, but it happens to be that Rav on the issue of Yerusha disagrees with Rav Shimon Gamliel and holds that the Yerusha Sabal is a din derabanan, and with a little bit of irony, even though you can overwrite the Torah, you cannot overwrite the derabanans. Asu chizuk ledivrehem. The rabbis legislate, and the chachamim are aware of the fact that when they legislate, we may not treat it with the same kind of respect and awe and reverence that we treat the chukei haTorah. And so, therefore, in order to reinforce their dine derabanan, so therefore, asu chizuk ledivrehem, and you can overwrite the derabanans. So, what the Gemara now is proposing is that Rav and Rav Shimon Gamliel agree, but only in conclusion, not in the process to get there. Shimon Gamliel says that Yerusha Sabal is a din d'oraisa, and ain't other masna mashikas b'Torah, and therefore, even if the condition was made that you're not going to inherit, I'm not going to inherit your nechsem alug, he will inherit the nechsem alug. Rav gets to that same conclusion, but through a different route. He holds that Adamasa Mashakas Batara, that a person can override that which the Torah says when it comes to Mamanos, and it happens to be that in Yerusha Sabal he does not hold it's a Dindaraisa, it's a Dindarabanan, and also Chizuk Ledivrayim, and the Chachamim reinforce their words, and therefore you can't override a Dindarabanan of Yerusha Sabal. Okay? That's what the Gemara is proposing right now. Top of Pei Dala Mad Aleph, Visavarav Tanah Kayim Bahai Idmar. So the Gemara says, but wait one second. What consider the following? We're going to see this in Bava Metzia. Ha'omer l'chavera amenashe ein l'chai alai ona'a. How about this? Let's do a transaction. Let's sell. And I know the Torah says that I cannot exploit you on the sale. Right? There's an Isser in the Torah of Al Tonu Isha Sachiv. Right? Parshas Bahar. So when we go into a business negotiation, so there is what's called fair market value, and I cannot overcharge or undercharge more than a sixth. And if I do so, mecha bato. Right? Over a sixth of its fair market value, and the sale is going to be a voided sale. How about this? How about I sell you something? I know what the fair market value is. You know what the fair market value is. I'll sell it to you on condition that we ignore the Isra and the Torah of Ona'a. Yes or no? Can we do that? So, Hamul Chaver Amenashe Lecha Alay Ona'a. Rav Amar Yeshlo Alav Ona'a. Rav says, even if such a stipulation is made, that's a stipulation that goes against the Torah, and therefore the condition is ignored, and at a later point in time, the buyer can go back to the seller and say, hey, you overcharged me. And the seller can say to the buyer, didn't we agree to those terms? And the buyer has the right, according to Rav, to say back to the seller, we agreed to those terms, but that's an agreement that goes against the Torah. Tanah batal. Shmuel Amar, just give me one second. Shmuel Amar ain lo alav ona. And Shmuel says no. In other words, if you agree that there's not going to be a na, so then there's not going to be a na. So you see a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. But where does Rav stand now on the issue of overriding? Rav is of the opinion that if it's an Isra d'oraisa, you cannot override the Isra in the Torah, and that goes against what we suggested just a moment ago. Yeah, Danny. Good. Ela halacha k'Rav Shimon Gamliel da Amar Masa Moshe Kaseh b'Torah Tana Obato v'Lav Mitameh. So the Gemara says, okay, we're going to go back to the drawing board, and here's what we're going to say: that Rav agrees principally with Rav Shimon Ben Gamliel, but not for the same reason. De'ilu Rav Shimon Gamliel savar meisa yirshenu v'Rav savar meisa lo yirshenu. So because Rav Shimon Gamliel says that if he dies, he inherits her. Rav's of the opinion that if he dies, he does not inherit her. So he doesn't inherit her property. And the reason why is because Rav's of the opinion that Yerusha Sabal is not a din d'oraisa, but rather a din d'rabbanan. And so, in other words, he principally agrees with Rav Shimon Gamliel of Eina Damasa Mashakasa B'Torah, but here the point of disagreement is he's of the opinion that Yerusha Sabal is not a din d'oraisa, it's only a din d'rabbanan. Now, what comes out is something a little bit strange. First of the Gemara's point, Hamitameh v'lo kirchasehu. So that means then that he agrees with Rav Shimon ben Gamliel in thought process, but the conclusion obviously comes out to be much different. And we'll also make another point as well, which is Tosus's point. It comes out now that according to Rav, what's the halacha? The halacha is that a husband will not inherit his wife, and that who does that go like in the Mishnah? That will then go like the Chachamim. Oh, I'm sorry. Not yet. I spoke too early in terms of making this point. Okay, no, right, correct. And then Rav will be going like the Chachamim. But then the problem, of course, is that Rav is not holding like Rav Shimon Gamliel, at least in the Halacha. Ella. So the Gemara goes now, this is attempt number 3. Halacha Rav Shimon Gamliel Damrei Meisa Yerushena. V'lav Mitameh. So again, we're going to suggest that he agrees with the Halacha, that if the husband makes a condition prior to the marriage and says, I will not inherit you, so he does inherit his wife's estate. Whereas Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is of the opinion that if you make a condition against the Torah, the condition becomes nullified because ain out the masna mashikas of the Torah. However, if it were a din derabanan, you can override dine derabanan, meaning mamonos. V'rav savar afilu b'derabanan. To know about them. And Rav's of the opinion that both by Daraisas and by Darabanan, so you can override that which you cannot override that which the Torah says, that which the Chachamim say. And so therefore, if you try to make a condition that goes against either Daraisa or Darabanan, the condition is just simply waived off. Okay? So now, what's the problem? Problem now is that Rav is in full agreement with Rav Shimon Gamliel. Hai ketameke chaseihu. V'rav mosifu. So now it comes out that Rav is in absolute full agreement with Rav Shimon Gamliel, and truth of the matter is that Rav is adding on. So Allah halachik Rav Shimon Gamliel damrei meisa yirshenu v'lav mitameh. So the Gemara says, okay, we're going to try to explain that statement one last time. De'ilu Rav Shimon Gamliel savar yirusha sabal daraisa v'chol masna mashikas b'torah tenabata. Good. So Rav Shimon Gamliel, we're going to say now for the fourth time, that doesn't change, and that is that you're trying to make a condition against that which the Torah says, it doesn't work. You cannot reprogram the Torah when it comes to mamonos, and so therefore the Torah says a husband inherits his wife, done. And even if you made a condition otherwise, the condition is just ignored. And Rav is of the opinion that the Yerusha of the husband is a din d'rabbanan, and the Chachamim came to amplify their laws to tell you that you cannot override the Dine de Rabbanan, and so therefore Rav agrees with Rav Shimon Gamliel in the conclusion, but how to get to that conclusion, he took a different path, he took a different avenue. Meaning that, as opposed to Rav Shimon Gamliel, where Yerusha Sabal is a Din de Raisa, Rav's of the opinion that Yerusha Sabal is a Din de Rabbanan. So there are two different paths to arrive at that conclusion. According to Rav Shimon Gamliel, the condition is nullified because you're trying to reprogram the Torah. You can't do that. According to Rav, the reason why the condition is batal is because you're trying to reprogram the Derabanan. You can't do that. Good. Okay, almost done. One last hurdle that we need to jump over in order to arrive at the conclusion. The Gemara says, wait one second. So you're telling me now that Rav is of the opinion that the husband inherits his wife, but that's not a din d'oraisa, that's only a din d'rabbanan. Consider the following. Rav Yochanan ben Broka Omer Ayorish es Ishto, a man who inherits his wife. So Yachzer Livnei Mishpacha V'Yinak Alehem in Adamim. So here's what happens. In Yovel, hand the property back to her family and get some sort of reimbursement. That makes no sense, what I just said. Right? Zero. Meaning, the Rav Yochanan ben Broka says that you inherit your wife, the husband inherits the wife, but when it comes to Yovel, so make sure to return it back to her family. Now we know that sales are returned in Yovel to the original owner. But once you're Yoresh, you are the owner. You are considered the primary owner of that land. As a result of that, it's not going to go back in Yovel to the original owner. You are the original owner. So what are you doing giving the land back to the family? And you're going to get some sort of reimbursement? That's the question. Now, if you're of the opinion that inheritance is a din d'oraisa, mayachzir. So what are you doing giving it back in Yovel? You're the owner. V'idirabanan. Now, if Yerusha Sabal is only a din d'rabanan, not a din d'oraisa, which means that you get it, but only because the Chachamim gave it to you. So that means that Minotaur, you're not the owner. So then, So then in Yovel, so what do? You give it back to its original owner. You're not getting it. You're not going to get any reimbursement for that. Okay. So, it's a simple question. What's going on in that Braisa? The Amar Rav Lalon Kesav Yerusha Sabal D'oraisa. So this is Rav's explanation. Key in on the word Rav. This is Rav's explanation now of that Braisa. Rav Yochanan ben Broka is of the opinion, La'olam Kesav Yerusha Sabal D'oraisa. That really Yerusha is a din d'oraisa. Good. Now, Ukigon, so now if it's a din d'oraisa, so that means it's yours, so what are you doing? Ukigon Sharisho Ishto Besak Varus. Okay, part of the Yerusha was the burial plots. Meaning, for whatever reason, I don't understand the first part of what happened over here. Dad gave to his daughter, to go into the marriage, a bunch of lands, and also burial plots as well. Okay. And now, she dies, and that means that Minotaurah, all that property goes from her over to him, to the husband. And now, the family goes back to the husband and says, look, Minotaurah, we know it's yours. But we're talking about the burial plots. Now, you want to be buried in the burial plot. Okay. I mean, I know you're the husband, but you want to be buried in the burial plot. Like, that we can... maybe yes, maybe no. But then other members of your family also going to get buried over there? Like, this is our family burial plot. Like, come on. So, Mishum Pigam Mishpacha Amrabanan Lishko Demei V'Lahader. So, there's this idea called Pigam Mishpacha. It's an interesting idea. In other words, it's just pasnished. It's just not appropriate that your family is going to be buried in our burial plot. And so therefore, even though min ha-Torah, right, really, you got to wrap your head around this. I don't want to have mine fully wrapped around this. But even though min ha-Torah, that land belongs to him, but that argument of Pagam Mishpacha is such a strong argument that they're entitled to buy back the burial plot from the husband, and that's what it means. It is a little bit difficult to understand then that we don't have to wait till Yovel for this to happen. Meaning, this buyback policy should be even earlier. But either way, in other words, that's Rav's explanation of the Braisa. So the Gemara says, and when we're talking now about a reimbursement, but a reimbursement with a deduction. Meaning, so where's the deduction? The word yinakeh means to, we're gonna take something off the sale price. What are we taking off the sale price? Gemara says, I'll tell you what we're taking off the sale price. Her burial plot. So the Gemara says that if a person sells the burial plot, the way to get to the burial plot, Mamad, Rashi goes through, there was a minhag back then that there would be a particular place they would designate in order to mourn on the way to the funeral, Makom Espedo, the place where you're eulogizing. So the family members can go and kovernos obal karcho, bury him there against his will, mishum pegam mishpacha. Meaning this idea of pegam mishpacha gives the family an allowance to override a sale that took place. Okay, it's, again, an interesting concept. So, what comes down now from all this is that according to Rav, the husband inherits his wife Minotaurah. At least that's the way Rav explained the Braisa. That's it. That's the way he explained Rav Yochanan ben Broka. So, everything worked up until we got to the end where Rav says that Yerusha Sabal is a din d'oraisa. So Rav the time of Rav Yochanan ben Broka kamar v'lei lo svirulei. So the Gemara says, look, that's a Mishnah, and Rav was explaining that Mishnah. That doesn't mean that he subscribes to the idea of the Mishnah. He's just telling you what the Mishnah means. Meaning the Mishnah is difficult. Rav came to explain the Mishnah. Good. That's the Mishnah. Now, in terms of Rav's own opinion is that Yerusha Sabal is not a Dinda Reis, it's a Dinda Rabbanan. Okay, just to conclude. So the halachas are Rosh Hashanah and Gamliel. That part's easy. How come? So for here, there are basically two paths to go down. Either because Rav Shimon Gamliel says, Ein Adamasa Mashikaz B'Torah, when the Torah gives us legislation like the husband is going to inherit his wife, that's a Din D'Oraisa, no condition can override that. That's Rav Shimon Gamliel's opinion. Whereas according to Rav holds that Yerusha Sabal is a Din D'Rabbanan, not a Din D'Oraisa, but he still will agree with the conclusion because Rav's of the opinion that by Dine D'Rabbanan, Asu Chizuk L'Divrehem, that the Chachamim reinforced their legislation, and so therefore you cannot overwrite that which the Chachamim state as well. Okay, Adkan, that takes us to the end of this discussion. Mishnah. Okay, a person dies, and there is a line of creditors out the door. And included in that line of creditors are, well, not all of them are creditors, but his wife, right, the widow, a Baal Chov, another creditor, and Yorshin, and the people that stand to inherit him. Now, at this point in time, you could easily make the argument, take the Yorish and put him right to the front of the line. In fact, even the idea that the Yorish is somewhere in this line is a funny idea. He's a Yorish. Right? Why are we lumping him together with a wife and other creditors when he's the one inheriting? So Misha meitz v'inech isha b'chol v'yorshin v'haya lo pikadon omal v'biyad acherim. So now what we're going to be discussing is the following. We're not talking about his real property, his real estate, because that goes directly to the Yorish. There's nothing to talk about. What we're talking about over here are assets that are currently being held by somebody else. Either a pikadon or a milva, right? But some movable item that's being held by somebody else, and now the question now becomes, who's going to get it? On one hand, the Yorish is the one who's going to inherit it. On the other hand, it's not on the Yorish's property person right now. And it's not a real estate, it's a movable. And think about now, the woman has a right to it, the Baal Chov has a right to it, so who do you give it to? Rabbi Tarfon Omar Yinasan L'Koshel Shebehem. So Rabbi Tarfon says, so give it to the Koshel. The Koshel, the weakest of the three.
Baal Chov doesn't have a shtar. Baal Chov doesn't have a shtar.
Sure he has one.
So it doesn't go to the karka, the shtar?
Again, it's not a karka. It's a movable. It's metaltalim. The item in question over here is a movable.
Shibud by his...
There may be a shibud, but we'll explain. Rabbi Akiva Omer Ein Merachman Bedin. Rabbi Akiva says this is not a place for rachmanus, right? In other words, right now we're talking about monetary law. It's law, and therefore Eli, you're not liyorshin. Give it to the Yorish. Shekulin tzrichin shvua. Look, it's not that the wife and the creditor don't have a right. Of course they have a right to it, but in order for them to extract that, they need to make a shvua. We have a rule. We say this rule a number of times throughout Shas. And that is that any time you're going to be collecting from the orphans, and even though you have a right, and even though you're a note holder, if you're going to collect from the Yorshin, you have to make a shvua. So what the Gemara now is arguing, this is Rabbi Kiva's argument, is why in the world would you give it to the creditor, the Baal Chov, or to the woman, who is also basically a creditor? In other words, she's also holding a note in her hand, otherwise known as a ksuva. Why would you give it to them when ultimately, in order for them to come and to collect from the estate, they have to make a shvua? Meanwhile, the estate themselves, they don't have to make a shvua to collect that which they inherit. Okay. Let's say what was left over was fruit that was detached from the ground. So in other words, it's not property. It's movable. It's called Kodem Bahem Zocha Bahem. So whoever gets there first is going to be Zocha. Zoch the Isha Yosem Iksivasa, Ubachov Yosem Achovo, so let's say the woman takes more than she was entitled to, or the creditor takes more than he was entitled to. And now there's Mosar, now there's leftover. So what do we do with this leftover on Mosar? Amar, Rabbi Tarfon Amar, Yinas L'Koshel Shebehem. So once again, Rabbi Tarfon says, give it to the person in the weakest position. Rabbi Akiva Amar, and Merachmeh Medim. And once again, Rabbi Akiva makes the same point. Again, this is monetary law. It's law. Don't have Rachmanus. Eli Yinas L'Yoshin, Shekolon Tzrichin Shvuah, Veina Yoshin Tzrichin Shvuah. Okay, give it to the Yoresh. Okay, lama lemisne milva lama lemisne pikan. The first question of the Gemara is a very simple one. In other words, we're now talking about either a loan that is a receivable to the estate, and we're talking also about a pikan, which is a movable item, but it's the same basic idea. Lama lemisne milva lama lemisne pikan. The Gemara says no, they're both absolutely necessary. The eat on a milva ba'akam a Rabbi Tarfon mishum de milva lotzan it. No, look, Rabbi Tarfon will tell you like as this. As we know, whenever you lend money, the expectation is that money is going to get spent, and obviously, what's going to happen is that borrower is going to have to procure and produce more money. In other words, that's the whole idea behind a loan. I'm borrowing the money because I need the money. What I'm going to pay you back with is money that I'm going to have to generate. Good. That's always understood. So the Gemara says, but you can make the argument that when it comes to pikadon, you know that if I deposit something by somebody, right? If I lend him my lawnmower, so that lawnmower didn't go anywhere. So one can make the very simple argument that I lend it to him, I die, now it's my yaresh. So what's Rabbi Tarfon going to argue with? Of course it should go back to the Yoresh, and it shouldn't go to anybody else. So there you could present that Rabbi Tarfon would agree to Rabbi Akiva. That's why I need the case of Bikanon to tell me that even in that case, Rabbi Tarfon is going to disagree with Rabbi Akiva. And then just the converse. And that's why I need the case of Milva, just to make sure that we know that Rabbi Akiva argues on that as well. I might have thought they would agree to Rabbi Tarfon. Okay, my lakosha. Now, what do we say? If it's a movable, if it's money, and right now there are three people in line, the Yoresh, the Bachov, and the woman, so you give it to the kosha. Who's the kosha? Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chinin, Amar lakosha Shebiraya. So Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina says, give it to the kosha Shebiraya. What does that mean? So Rashi explains what that means is as follows. Of the creditors, each one of them is holding a note. The note is going to have a date on it, right? For the earliest date is going to have the strongest case, because whenever his note is dated earliest, is going to have a lien going all the way back to that note. So that's going to give him a strong position against the estate when he's coming to collect against the estate, because now he has he's the first one in line. So anyone who has the most recent date on their document is the one with the weakest position, and that's who you give this item to. Give it to him, the weakest position. That's Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Yochanan Amar L'Ksuvas Isha. No. You want to know who's got the weakest position? The woman's got the weakest position. Mishum China, and the reason why you're going to give it to the woman is because of Chain. What does that mean? Well, basically, before we explain what Chain means, basically it means like this. Look, you have a long list, a line of people who are, you know, each one of them have a right to get it, but given the choice, this is again explanation, Rabbi Tarfon. Given the choice of who to give it to, in other words, give it to the woman. She right now is in the weakest position. Rashi explains before we get to the explanation of Chain. Rashi says, "Ein darka lechaze achanichse emes levakish hechen yishlo karka," because think about it, a regular creditor. So he's gonna hunt. He's owed money. He's got a receivable. He's going to look for that property. In other words, wherever that property is, it's either in the estate, or if the estate sold off the property, he's going to hunt it down. But a woman, however, it's not the derech of a woman to go start hunting around for that property to pay off for ksuva. So if there's any available assets right now, so first things first, give it to the woman. That's Rashi's explanation of why she's a kosha. And then the Gemara adds another point, and that's Mishum Chain. What does that mean? So as we see this a number of times in the Gemara, and this is a constant debate amongst the Rishonim what that means. Rashi over here says, Shiimtsu anashim chain beinei anashim yunasus la'en shalo tidagen alav sik suvasa. Because think about this. Anytime a woman knows that her ksuva is going to be an uncollectible debt, so you know what? let me not get married. In fact, to support Rashi, let's go over what we learned just a couple days ago in the daf. Remember, before the takana of Shimon ben Shetach, women wouldn't marry men. Why? Because there was no shibur for the ksuva. Meaning it used to be, back in the good old days, and these were not good old days, it used to be that the ksuva was a non-secure document. And so that means that the woman can only go after assets that the husband had. That's it. And if he sold off properties, I don't have a lien on that property. So no, thank you. And women didn't get married. So anytime the ksuva becomes an uncollectible debt, so women are just simply not going to be interested. So that's the way Rashi explains the word chayin. Tosfos over here quotes Rabbeinu Chanan. Rabbeinu Chanan says that chayin is a function of having the women becoming more available and attractive for the next suitor. In other words, she'll have a ksuva, she'll collect her ksuva, and then she'll have a better chance at moving on in life, so to say. So the Gemara quotes a Braisa. Let me just read a little bit more. Mishum Chinah. Kit Tanai, the Gemara points out that this is Machlokas Tanai. Rabbi Yamin Amr Lakosha Shabraya, Vahu Kosher. Rabbi Lazar Amr Laksuvas Isha Mishum Chinah. Okay, Machlokas Tanai, exactly what is meant by Chin. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up at the two dots start at the bottom of the Amud. Okay, and we'll stop over here. The learning that we do this morning.